Welcome to Parent Talk, the show for parents, brought to you by the India Community Center. I'm your host, Vidya. As always, this is a live show and the call-in number is 510-770-1550. June is college month on Parent Talk. Each week, we will discuss a different aspect of college like admissions, nutrition, stress, and independent living. For more details on each show and the guests, check out indiacc.org/parenttalk. And if you want to participate in any of the shows, please drop me a line at radio@indiacc.org. Today, we are going to talk about picking a career or a field of study. Most kids go through high school or even the first couple of years of college without knowing what their interests, talents or abilities are. How can we help our kids find the career path that will suit them the best? In the studio with me are Louise Gokil, have I got that right?
Yes.
And Kishma Patnaik. Louise is a career coach who has helped both teens and adults figure out their passion and inspiration. Welcome to the show, Louise.
Thank you.
Kishma Patnaik works as an aptitude consultant at the Johnson O'Connor Research Foundation. Welcome, Kishna.
Thank you.
Parents, if you have questions or concerns about helping your child find their best path forward, you can call at 510-770-1550. Now, Louise and Kishma, as I mentioned in my intro, most kids really go through high school without having a very clear idea of what they would like to do in college and further on. So isn't this typical? Isn't high school supposed to be a place where you're just exposed to a lot of different subjects and then you try everything out and gradually find your way forward? Or is this are kids supposed to be able to figure this out by the time they finish high school? Louise, do you want to take that first?
Sure. Well, these days, high school students' lives are very, very busy. And when we're exposing our children to a lot of options for their careers, we really need to consider not only the academics that they're pursuing mm-hmm. within the classroom, but also all their after-school weekend activities. So I found that the best thing a parent can do for a teenager is to expose the teen to other adults with whom they'd love them to learn things.
Okay.
So if you can...
Give me an example.
So if you... when you have choices, say your child is interested in dance, mm-hmm. and you have choices of two or three dance studios, dance programs, pre-professional, a hobby, exercise, whatever the theme might be of the dance program, look at the adults who are going to be with your child.
Okay.
And really assess if they're the kind of person you would like your child to learn from.
Mm-hmm.
I found that as a parent myself, that when my little one was two, I was number one. She would come to me first for advice, and then secondly, she would go to other adults, and thirdly, to her peers, of course. But as she became a teenager, it reversed.
Mm-hmm.
It was totally upside down. I was number three. Other adults were number two, and peers were number one. So if we have a chance as parents to insert other adults whom we feel would be helpful, loving, kind, and very interested in our child and provide the modeling, the teaching, the support that our child needs, that's a key element.
Finding those mentors, I guess.
Exactly.
Kishma, coming back to the question, which is high school a good place or good time for teens to find out what they're supposed to be good at? How do they do that?
Well, I think that increasingly when they're making decisions about where to go to school, they like to have an idea of mm-hmm. what they're going to study. That helps determine where they're going to go.
Mm-hmm.
So what we do at the Johnson O'Connor Research Foundation is that we give tests that help them figure out what their strengths are.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the basis of strengths, we can kind of create maps for them, places for them to explore certain careers that might be more in tune with their strengths. So yes, I think definitely high school is a time to be gradually figuring this out, and mm-hmm. aptitudes testing can kind of give a map as to what things to try in order to come to a decision that's mm-hmm. more clear and perhaps sooner as well.
So aptitude testing is definitely one way that you can at least figure out intellectually, perhaps, let's go over this a little bit. So
mm-hmm.
it looks at the intellectual capacity of the child, definitely, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
Does it also look at the emotional and temperamental suitability?
So aptitude testing tests things that I guess people would slot into categories that are not about cognitive or intellectual strengths. For example, we test musical abilities. We are testing ways of working.
Mm-hmm.
I guess the test that looks at ways of working could border on temperament. I wouldn't say that they're synonymous, mm-hmm. but it's much wider than simple, is somebody simply good at math or science or English and history? Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes it's difficult within high school because kids are slotted into one of two categories. Mm-hmm. And as we all know, the work world is so much broader than simply those two categories.
Right.
So it's not simply about what we consider kind of like cognitive or academic strengths. Mm-hmm. It encompasses lots of things.
Louise, would you say that a teen is a good judge? Even when answering these aptitude tests, do you think that they would be able to answer, not correctly, there isn't a correct or a wrong, but they would be able to understand their own minds and be able to answer those questions?
So you're asking if they know themselves.
Yes, exactly.
And that's a journey that we're all on forever, for our whole lives. So the teenager, particularly males, are a little slower in trying to understand themselves, but we need to not think that they have to be an adult just yet,
uh-huh.
that we have to give them the developmental time mm-hmm. to try things out, experiment, and then as they are given time to reflect and really assess, then they'll know themselves more and more. So, yes, teenagers do have a sense.
Mm-hmm.
If a teenager is saying, no, I don't want to do that, and hating it, it may be because of lots of different factors, but you have to pay attention to what the student is saying,
mm-hmm.
the teenager is saying.
Uh-huh. Go ahead.
I was going to say that also I think that that's kind of the strength of our testing, is that we're not really asking the student, do you think you're good at this? Do you think you're good at that?
Mm-hmm.
To the contrary, we're kind of giving them tasks to do and then watching speed and with what
interest,
facility they do those tasks.
Mm-hmm.
So that, I think, is why it's so useful, because it is a time. I mean, if you think about what they've been exposed to, they've had all of their subjects,
mm-hmm.
but they really haven't had a sense to know or time to know whether they're good at this or that. So aptitude testing gives them a little bit of information. Hey, you perform really well when it comes to spatial tasks, and spatial tasks relate to things like engineering and medicine. So mm-hmm. maybe those are areas that you should check out.
Mm-hmm. I want to ask more about, you know, once you get the results of the aptitude test, or once you sit down with the teenager and say, okay, you're good at this and you're good at that, how does that translate to the real world? But let's take a break, and right after the break, we'll address these questions. You're listening to Parent Talk. We're talking about career coaching and aptitude testing today as part of College Month. The call-in number is 510-770-1550. Welcome back to Parent Talk. I'm your host, Vidya. It's a show sponsored by the India Community Center. And today we are talking about aptitude testing and career coaching with Louise Gokul and Kishma Patnaik. Before the break, we talked a little bit about whether teens would be able to know themselves, as Louise pointed out, and be able to answer appropriately for aptitude testing. And the other thing that Louise brought out was that it's important to have teens be exposed to adult mentors in the fields that they're interested in, not necessarily academically, but even outside of school, so that they have an opportunity to see what the real world is like and be exposed to those areas and those career paths in the real world as well. Louise, you had something else to add to the aptitude testing that we talked about earlier.
Yes, I support aptitude testing because it gives tremendous data, and it gives an insight to someone that's objective, and they can then sort of like not have to take it so personally. I found that when the three areas overlap of interest,
mm-hmm.
Passions, and then your skills and aptitudes, and then the economics of the marketplace and your personal economics.
Mm-hmm.
So when those passions, skills, aptitudes, and economics overlap in a Venn diagram, mm-hmm. three circles over somehow touching each other, that sweet spot is where you have your best chance mm-hmm. for success in the world of work. You can have your success anywhere, but that's mm-hmm. your best shot.
But is that realistic? How many people does that happen? that their interests, their passions, that and their talent. For instance, somebody may say, you know what, I would love to sing. And you can see from this American Idol tryouts that there are so many people who think they can sing. And you know, you can see the anguish in their eyes when they're saying, this is what I want to do. If I don't do this, I have nothing else left. And that shows a really strong passion, really strong interest, but there's no talent there. So couldn't that be possible that, you know, you have, you're desperate, you want to do something, you want to be an astronaut really, really badly, but the physics, you don't cut it. Does that happen, Kishma, when people come to you?
Absolutely, it can happen. But a lot of times what I find is somebody is very passionate about something. There's some activity within that that does connect to an aptitude. It's not always the case, but oftentimes, let's say in the case of the American Idol, maybe they enjoy performing.
Right.
So perhaps they're not going to be performing, singing in front of a group as a rock star, but maybe they would enjoy presenting marketing material and persuading a group of people, which still has an aspect of performance.
I see. That's interesting.
Yeah. So what we try to do, I mean, we certainly don't look at the aptitudes and say you are destined to be a chef when they have zero interest in cooking. It's trying to look at what their pattern says and then connect it to interests. So in that sense, I completely agree with Louise. It's always how they connect.
And Louise, you talked about looking at the after-school activities that the kids are in, because that's probably where their interests show and really not, maybe not in school. But here's my question. Suppose you have a child who plays the violin beautifully, enjoys it. Does that mean that she's suited for a career as a violinist? Or does that show, and this leads off to your last question, does this show an aptitude for something, a career that sort of connected to that particular talent? And I'll open this question to both of you.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Well, I think there's many layers to it. And first of all, we all need passion and pleasure in our lives. And so if playing the musical instrument and pursuing learning about it is supporting the individual just to grow and know herself and, you know, become more robust and talented in any arena, yes, that's great. Mm-hmm. Then you can take it from there to what is it about the music playing of this instrument, what's the most precious thing about it for that person? Is it the teacher relationship?
Uh-huh.
Is it the ability to read music and imagine they're writing their own music?
Mm-hmm.
Is it because they're really want to be part of an ensemble and they're not a sports person, so soccer's not going to cut it?
Mm-hmm.
Going deeper and more into the exact connections that the individual has with this experience, that's where your keys are.
Mm-hmm.
And parents can do that the best because they know the child from the get-go and can really take the time to individually explore with that person. Why? Why is this so good for you?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I see your light. People have noticed how good you are. What makes it good for you?
Mm-hmm. But I have to tell you, this has been my experience with myself as a parent in the Indian community and other parents in the Indian community, is that we expose our children or we put our kids in certain classes, you know, because we have this fixed idea in our head that all our children should have at least one musical instrument, maybe one extra language, and one sports. And sometimes it's a lot of it is a matter of convenience. I find the class that's closest to my house or the teacher that's closest to my house, and this is something that I can fit into my work schedule, and that's how the child gets exposed to these activities. I doubt if many kids go to their parents and say, hey, I want to learn this. This is what I want to do. A lot of kids are doing stuff because of circumstances and because of the convenience factor for their parents. When these kids come to you, Kishma, do you see that? Do you see that in your practice, that you have kids coming to you who have been doing things because of convenience, and now they're really not sure whether what they've been doing for this long is something that they really want to continue doing?
Actually, I think kids have kind of strong senses once they've been exposed to something, whether they like it or not.
Mm-hmm.
I think the parents that bring their children to see us are looking to maybe make decisions that are going to go directly to what the child will be good at or what the child will be interested in.
Mm-hmm.
So for example, if you have a child who has no musical aptitude and they've been taking music lessons for the last 2 or 3 years, mm-hmm. they'll oftentimes sit in the summary results and say to the parent, see, I told you I didn't like it. And,
so it comes through in the testing.
Yeah, and oftentimes the parent will say, okay, well, maybe we can ease off of the violin and we can move you over to a ceramics class because your aptitudes show that you're good at constructing or making things. Mm-hmm. So I think because it's the way it currently is that there are things that everybody should take. Mm-hmm. Aptitude testing is very good in that it makes it more individual. It's like, no, not everybody is going to be happy playing the violin, and not everybody's going to wish to take a ceramics class, and mm-hmm. not everybody's going to be interested in writing poetry. But let's see what you individually might like. Mm-hmm. Because it's not that an aptitude can tell us exactly, but it can give us a ballpark
of interest. And how young do you start? How young can you how young can the child be for the parent to say, okay, let's find out what you're good at, and maybe we won't waste a lot of time trying to do things that you're not interested in, you're not talented in, but let's sort of zero in. Is that an ambitious plan or an over ambitious plan, or is that something that is practical and feasible?
Well, I just want to add that before formal testing, you can be doing that at age 4.
Yeah.
You know, you can be asking the child, what do you like? What don't you like? Mm-hmm. You know, and if the child responds positively to an ice skater on the Olympics TV show, well, then, you know,
maybe
let's go watch an ice skating class. Mm-hmm. The issue of convenience is a huge determinant right now as to what children are doing, but as much as possible, if we can back off from that mm-hmm. and look at who are we really serving, and is our end goal the child or ourselves?
I suppose so. Kishma, you have something to add to that?
Yeah, so I completely agree with Louise. I think that children, like I said, children will tell you what they like and what they don't. What we found through our research is that aptitudes mm-hmm. don't tend to be steady until around age 14 or 15.
I see.
So that prior to that, there can be a lot of flux in terms of what the child is good at and not.
Right. If you ask a group of 4-year-olds, you know, or 5-year-olds, they'll be like ballerinas and right. firefighters and cops, right?
Right?
So, yeah, probably not a great indicator of what they're really going to
right.
do when they grow up and what their parents will let them do.
Absolutely.
And that's going to be my next question, but you can, yeah.
Even in terms of testing, is somebody who comes in at age 10 might have a low score on something and then at age 16, not.
I
so
see.
This is why we don't test anybody before the age of 14. And we frankly prefer 15 or 16 because then they're actually starting to ask the kinds of questions that aptitude testing answers.
I see. That makes sense. That makes a lot of sense. Tell me, what stumbling blocks do you commonly find in your experience? I mean, when you're doing the testing, what's the profile of the person who comes to be tested? Have they come before deciding on what they want to do, or have they come after they've been to college and they're like, oh, I don't like this stuff at all, I want to do something else?
We see everything. So we test from age 15 all the way up. I saw a gentleman not that long ago who was 72 years old and retiring from his law firm and mm. wanted to justify to his wife why he didn't want to go to Florida and have the typical retirement life. So we see everything. But in terms of the age group that we're talking about, lots of people come in the junior year of high school because they're starting to investigate colleges and they hit a wall in terms of investigation because they're like, well, in order to know where I want to go, I need to know the types of things I'm interested in, and school has not been sufficient to help me figure that out.
Mm-hmm.
But we see lots of kids who are in their second and third year of college as well, mm-hmm. trying to figure out whether this is the right major, then kids who have just graduated from college are unsure how to take their academic interests and turns them into jobs. So it's really useful at every stage along the way.
Right. Louise, what about you? What kind of kids have you supported?
Generally, the kids I've supported have been the parents who have identified their child struggling, mm-hmm. and they've wanted help with something concrete that's along the way, whether it be college prep essay, whether it be their first summer job and they need a resume, mm-hmm. Whether it be they're going for some sort of academic program that's in addition to the regular school, and they want to prepare their personal statement.
Mm-hmm.
So those kinds of opportunities are great for the child to be aware of and the parent to be aware of. Here we are at a vantage point to really explore what's going to be the most beneficial.
Mm-hmm.
And so interviewing the child and spending time with them and getting to know who they are and helping them getting to disclose and discern and really think, go a layer deeper, go two layers deeper, helping them develop their awareness is really powerful.
Mm-hmm. On that note, let's take another break. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about career coaching, aptitude testing, and what happens if you've made a big mistake in the college you've chosen. Is there a way back? Is there a way to fix this? Welcome back to Parent Talk. We've been talking about career coaching and aptitude testing with Louise Gokul and Kishma Patnaik. And if you have questions about helping your child find their right career path in the future, please give us a call at 510-770-1550. Now, here's my question. By telling our kids, okay, this is what you're good at, and this is where you're likely to be happy, are we limiting them in some way? Because I'm sure there are many, many ways of being happy and successful in life.
Oh, yeah, there's... I don't know. With children, it's all about development. And so we're giving them a place to start.
Mm-hmm.
And if we look at it as that and as opposed to a lifelong commitment or a lifelong sentence, then I think we're okay in nudging them from what we can see,
mm-hmm.
not just for our convenience again, but for their wholeness, then yes, I think we're doing them a favor.
Okay. Kishma?
I don't think we're limiting them in that it's not quite so specific that we're saying we're taking out our rubber stamp and stamping accountant across their head and sending them out the door. It's kind of saying, gee, you're really fascinated by numbers. So maybe you'll use numbers in a public health context. Maybe you will be a trader. Maybe you will do nonprofit development.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a very wide application of talents. It's not quite so specific. So it's kind of allowing them to see all the applications for what they're interested in.
So at the end of the testing, do you have a recommendation for a course of study to follow?
It's generally not a single course.
Okay.
It's generally a few things that might be appropriate for them. And then
mm-hmm.
it's their interests and their values and their sense of the kind of economic choices that they want to make that will make the decision.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it's much broader than a single thing.
So what if your interests lead you in a particular direction and then you find you completely dislike it? Has that happened? Can that happen?
Yeah, it happens often.
Yes.
And probably to us at some point, you know, in terms of we went down one path
mm-hmm.
for maybe a short time as opposed to a long time. It's all about then taking a step and not beating yourself up. I find that people have the greatest hurdles when they feel stuck,
mm-hmm.
when they feel as if they are somehow invested all this money or time or commitment or their parents' dreams into one arena and they have to stick with it,
mm-hmm.
when in fact they're doing themselves a disservice. I believe that we're all here for a certain purpose
mm-hmm.
and that we all have our work to do, quote-unquote work,
mm-hmm.
and that everyone has a contribution to make. And so if you're in the wrong place doing the wrong thing, we're not, as a community, as a society, as a world, benefiting from what you can bring.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that people need to have an idea that there's flexibility and that career search is not a straight line. It's like sailing. It's tacking.
Mm-hmm.
You go one direction, then you feel the wind,
mm-hmm.
which in the career world is data. When the data tells you it's not working,
mm-hmm.
then you assess, reevaluate, and try a different path.
But I think there is you do tend to lose out, right? Because if you start on a career path a little later in life, I'm just saying you're tacking to the wind and you're saying, okay, this was not the right way to be. Let me try something new. You're definitely falling behind in terms of your progress. I'll give you an example. I know someone who is a salesperson for a software company, but really what he would like to be doing is programming, right? But he's now at the point in his life, and he's like, I don't know how to get back on track. I don't know if I start now, I'm going to be so way behind my peers. I'm going to be paid so much less than what I'm getting paid right now. And that's a trade-off a lot of people have to make, that economic trade-off.
Yes.
I think, too, that this is part of the usefulness of testing younger, is that, yes, I completely agree that there will always be tacking.
Mm-hmm.
But you're going to not tack 3,000 miles off the coast of Chile to 3,000 miles off the coast of a terribly different country. You're going to be kind of in a general direction and tacking in smaller distances.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a very big difference between programming and sales. We would say, just in terms of an aptitude pattern, that it's quite possible they don't share much.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why those reorientations are so extremely difficult.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're kind of tacking within the same genre, mm-hmm. then it's a little bit calmer seas in a way.
You know, I have to say that as a member of the Indian community and from my experience, we grew up in a very different kind of environment. We had a few career choices that were economically feasible. And I'm sure it's been your experience as well, that you have a lot of people coming to you who followed a certain path in life because that was the only way to improve their economic lot in life, or especially with the Indian education system, they were slotted in it because they were smart. The Indian education system does tend to slot people as the smartest go to engineering, the sciences, the next go to commerce, and the you know, people who really can't cut it go into the arts.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very strange, but you know, we've all grown up in that, and we've all had experiences of parents being in jobs that were not that may not have satisfied them in their souls, but it was a way to provide for the family, and they did it, and they were perfectly they led perfectly happy lives, and that's the model that we follow. So to say that, okay, you know, you do exactly what you want to do, it sort of goes against the grain for mm-hmm. definitely for the Indian community. What do you say? I mean, is that something you've experienced?
Absolutely. Like, I have seen so many unhappy Indian engineers and even Indian doctors who essentially did it because they had to, and now mm-hmm. on a daily basis they're disliking their work. And in a certain sense, I think that they have bought the opportunity to make a choice about how much they want to prioritize economics and how important it is for them to do something that they're more interested in.
Mm-hmm.
But they've paid for that choice.
Right.
I think it's all peace of mind. You know, you're mentioning values. I totally encourage people to spend some time clarifying their values, because if they have chosen this career path
mm-hmm.
and it's not the violin playing person performer that they wanted to be, but they chose it because of family mm-hmm. support, sustainability,
right.
opportunity, ability to move across the world, whatever. Those values, they really are probably the top tier values.
Mm-hmm.
And so there really doesn't have to be dissonance. It really can be, yeah, I am living the life I intended. And if I want to play music, well, then I'll join the community band.
Right.
You know, the community
I'll do
orchestra.
It on the side. I'll
exactly.
Do it. Mm-hmm.
Or I'll, you know, work in an engineering firm that's related to music, you know, in a music company.
Mm-hmm.
Or I'll donate to a foundation, whatever.
Right. Yes.
There really can be, one needn't say that I've come so far, I have made it through a master's program in engineering, and now I'm going to drop everything and be a filmmaker and be a starving artist.
Mm-hmm.
It can be small sidesteps that mm-hmm. suddenly make a career more satisfying. So maybe I'm not doing engineering for a software company, but maybe I'm doing sound engineering, or I'm doing the technical side of film, which gets me into mm-hmm. that world, mm-hmm. but is still in a little bit more practical and stable position.
Or I do a plays on the weekends or something like
Absolutely.
That satisfies the artistic part of me.
Absolutely.
And if we go back to that model again of that sweet spot of your skills and aptitudes, then your passions, your interests, and then the economics,
mm-hmm.
and where those three overlap, that's where you have your best chance of success. You can have success beyond that sweet spot, but
mm-hmm.
the more you can bring and have clarity as to what those three arenas, where they all intersect,
mm-hmm.
then you have your best shot.
Mm-hmm.
But I do just want to comment too that it's whenever somebody comes in and I look at their pattern and I see they have absolutely no aptitudes that would suit them for the profession of engineering,
mm-hmm.
they tell stories about how hard it is to swim upstream constantly, and
right.
how much extra yeah. work they're doing, and how unhappy they are. And the aptitude testing is great in that it gives them a sense, a justification for those feelings. It's like, oh, I see here
mm-hmm.
that it's not just me lacking will,
mm-hmm.
that there really is something that I might be a little bit better suited for. And
is
not uncommon.
Is that a message that is comfortable to take in, that you may not be good at something? it seems to be a, you know, it's a reality check, but I don't know how many parents and kids can absorb that message without feeling that they're letting themselves or their families down.
In that situation, the overwhelming emotion seems to be relief. It doesn't mean that they're going to drop everything and no longer do that work. But now they know that they're not crazy or that they're not strong enough to push through. They understand kind of what's been going on. In the case of kids, I mean, really, when we sit down, we're not concentrating very much on what they can't do. We're concentrating on what they can. And that's why I think the testing is so useful, as opposed to kind of disability, learning disability models, or what's wrong, or why am I not performing in X subject matter. It's really looking at, given all of these things, what does your brain just perform wonderfully at? And let's really focus in on that. So we don't spend so much time saying, oh, no medicine for you. We're going straight to what it is that they can do, especially with kids.
Well, and given the current economic situation, there's a lot of graduates who aren't finding employment. So I'm sure that for parents, it's one of the primary focuses of finding college for the kid or a stream of study is what is the economic future for these kind of jobs. How do you balance that need to make sure that your child is going to be financially secure with what they love to do? I mean, the kid might say, I want to be a video game tester or something like that, you know. And then you say, you know, there's really not a whole lot of money in it, and you'll be struggling. Or somebody says, I want to be a painter. And, you know, you never know with these kind of jobs whether you're going to be successful or not. The child may be deliriously happy doing it, but may not be able to support himself or herself. So as a parent, you know, do you come across these kind of situations? And what advice do you give parents in this situation?
Well, I think if the painter wants to paint, in some ways we almost can't stop them. And so we want to support them, and if they need some business courses to take accounting along the way, if they can possibly, if that's an interest, or if they want to take marketing so they can promote themselves, there's a way to flush out and sort of enrich the core competencies, the core aptitudes, the core desires and interests, so that there's something more marketable. I will tell you, though, in today's marketplace, if someone does not shine, they are not selected for employment. So the more you're able to shine, which is connecting with all of your best sides, the more you are going to be competitive. So it's probably better to be a shining X than a not shining Y, and somehow you think there's more jobs than Y. There may be jobs,
but the person
may not actually secure what they need.
Right. But yeah, that's true. My experience with the Indian community has been that there is at least a sort of a self-selecting group, because so many of us were engineers who came over here. They're bright kids. And really, if they did aptitude tests, I did an aptitude test as a child, and they said, hey, you're fine at everything. And that was not helpful at all, because I needed to know, okay, you shouldn't be doing this, and this is what you should be doing. But that's not the answer I got. I think I may have scored a little bit lower in spatial testing, but other than that, it was like, oh, you did fine in everything. And I said, that doesn't help me at all, because I didn't have any major interests when I was growing up. I wasn't very sure. I still don't know. You know, and there's a lot of people like that. I'm sure not all of us hit on that right thing, that this is what I want to do. So in that state of ambiguity, what would you advise to someone that who's scoring generally doing well, and you know, they're bright people, they ace all the tests that you give them, or they like all the tasks that you give them, and there are people like that, and then what do you do?
There are, within, let's say we have 22 tests, within those 22 tests, there's absolutely a hierarchy of aptitudes, so some aptitudes really have more clout in what your brain wants to do on a regular basis. So somebody might be bright in most of everything, but there's still going to be a few things we can pick out as being the top of what they need to satisfy or what they need to educate, as the question might be.
Okay. My other question is, not everybody can afford aptitude testing. If you're a parent who can't afford it, but you want to do the best for your child, what should you be doing?
I would say exposure. Mm-hmm. Kind of how the whole discussion began. If you can't afford aptitude testing, mm-hmm. then you give them little mini tests all throughout their life. So you expose the child to dance. Oh, perhaps they don't have rhythm memory. You expose the child to woodworking. Looks like they might not be spatial. Mm-hmm. You see where they're... Because earlier I talked about there being a connection between interests and aptitudes, and I think that is true. Like, if a child is really excelling at something, there's aptitude there.
Right.
And if the child is saying, this is very difficult for me, and if you're noticing that as well, that's probably an indicator that that is difficult for them.
Mm. So in that sense, we are using academics as a little bit of an indicator for what the child may be good or bad at.
True. It's a rough indicator in that it's so there's two things. There's mm-hmm. liberal arts and there's science math. And so there's
That's
a lot
true.
More nuance within those two categories mm-hmm. that academics sometimes don't get at.
Right,
especially at the high school level. It will become more of a predictor as kids go on. Like mm-hmm. a child who doesn't have spatial reasoning might be doing well in science just because they're very inquisitive and problem-solving oriented, but that's going to last until a certain level, and then they're going to find it really difficult.
Right.
So...
I think it's really clear, just to join in, that the developmental perspective is really key, that there really isn't a point where you can sort of say, oh, yeah, the person has made it or not.
Mm-hmm.
And when we do that to ourselves or to each other, it's really not accurate or truthful. We are constantly evolving. That's what our species does. We are
mm-hmm.
constantly evolving. And so there's often times where we need to... look at the whole picture, where we've come, and just take the next step, not the lifelong commitment.
I guess. But how easy is it to change? I mean, I'm sure there are people who come to you and say, okay, and I was referred to your organization by someone whose daughter was pursuing a particular course of study, and then she did not enjoy it, and they came to your organization to get tested, Kishma, and said, okay, now tell me what I should rather be doing. But at the time, so you take the aptitude test and you find out, okay, this is what I should be doing. How easy is it to change tracks at that point? Is it easy? I know in this country, at least, it's possible, something that may not be possible in countries like India, but here it's probably possible. But how easy it is? What about the investment in time, investment in money? Is that...
Well, I know that from my work in academia that, yes, it is possible. Yes, there may be a cost, but down the road there's going to be a bigger cost. So I think that getting more awareness and mm-hmm. trying new things and sampling, again, not full-fledged commitment, but sampling is really very smart for children.
Is summer a good time to do that sampling and sort of expose your kids to different jobs?
I think so.
I was just going to say that volunteering is extremely appreciated these days. And in the world of work, oftentimes the academics may be mm-hmm. outweighed by the solid volunteer experiences. So even if there's not a pre-professional training program, but there's an opportunity for a child to work with a neighbor who does a fascinating job for them, then, you know, 4 hours a week, only on, 1 hour a week, whatever, a full week for 40 hours and then try something else the next mm-hmm. week. Those kinds of experiences really do add tremendous data mm-hmm. and visceral experiences that the person can really start to explore themselves.
Mm-hmm. And in terms of your question, are you speaking about when a child is already in college? And
mm-hmm.
okay,
yeah.
So several thoughts around that is that it seems that what you study as your undergrad degree does not determine what comes after mm-hmm. for the great majority of people.
Right.
I read
right.
a statistic that said 92% of people never have a job directly related to their college career
mm-hmm.
or their college major. So sometimes, let's say a child is in the third or fourth year of their studies and they're almost done, we're not going to say necessarily you have to completely reorient your major and tack 3 more years onto your undergrad career. We
right.
can say, well, going forward,
finish it.
Now you know that when you seek graduate work, when you start to seek jobs, like there was an example of a girl who really showed up to have the pattern of very much of a communicator,
mm-hmm.
Somebody who probably wouldn't be interested in doing scientific bench work.
Right.
So coming out of college, she knows, well, maybe I would be heading more for spokesperson of Genentech than the biologist sitting in
Right, right.
In doing the research.
That's fantastic. And I think we're running out of time, so that's all our show for today. Thank you, Louise and Kishma, for being here today and sharing your thoughts with us. Next week on Parent Talk, we'll be talking about college admissions. If you want to participate in any of our shows, please write to me at radio@indiacc.org. And you can find the lineup of shows at indiacc.org/parenttalk. That's where you'll also find this show's recording and the recording of past shows. The show's producer is Saad Jaffrey, and the theme tune was composed by Naren Pradhan. Tune in same time, same place next week for another show on parenting. Till then, bye-bye.